Hello, friend. Welcome. Carm Capriato here. Remarkable Results Radio's episode 512. This episode is the fifth and final part of a wide-open panel I moderated September 2019 at the ASA Illinois annual meeting. Now, this episode speaks to one of the hottest topics in the industry right now and probably for a long time to come, succession. And we also got into standard operating procedures and ADAS.
If your exit plan is they're coming to get me in the ambulance, you're screwed. So is your successor.
Right.
If your successor is not, if you don't let go of the reins soon enough, your successor will leave.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Carm here, and Remarkable Results Radio is so proud to talk to you about Apex. Now, hey, I was there at Apex 2019, and it's in the record books. It was a great show. Now, I must say that Apex did present leading-edge technology from suppliers, but they did a phenomenal job of showcasing the emerging tech of tomorrow. They even had a video clip of one of our ADAS Academy shows playing in a loop. Now, that was called The Business Side of ADAS. It was Academy Episode 138. You've got to see it. You've got plenty of time to plan for 2020. That will be November 3rd through the 5th, 2020. And big news this year, Repair Shop HQ will debut at Apex 2020. Apex now more than ever. Hey, if this is your first time listening to the Aftermarket's premier podcast, I welcome you. The catalog is abundant with every imaginable topic and audio workshop you need to keep you in learning mode. And now you've come to the right place to feed your perpetual student requirements to always be learning. Hey, look me up at Vision 2020. Please stop and say hi. My studio will be just outside the Expo Hall. Pick up a Tribe sticker and display it proudly. And look for my podcast alumni poster as a silent auction item for the TTEF scholarship. Hey, I was honored again to moderate an all-day panel discussion with the ASA Illinois members, where I also gave my keynote in September 2019. This was an exceptional panel that brought their A game to play. Now, you're investing in Part 5, and we call it Aftermarket Acumen. With me is Donnie Cypher from Cypher's Automotive and NASDAQ, Jeremy O'Neill, Freedom Automotive and Advisor Fix. Danny Sanchez is here from Auto Shop Solutions, along with Sarah Frazier from Haas Performance Consulting and Jim Silverman from ATI. Find the show notes at remarkableresults.biz/E512. Now, copy and paste those show note talking points for your own meeting agenda. I hope you find the power in these audio workshops and take just one spark of an idea and implement it. Let me remind you all, Jeremy O'Neill, Donnie Cypher, Sarah Frazier, Danny Sanchez, and Jim Silverman. One of the things that I think was a burning discussion point from Jim Silverman, and I really want him to start off an important dialogue on succession planning. I look around the room and I see a few people that have the same hair color that I have. It's one of the biggest topics that I talk about with people, and it is not an easy topic to discuss because it's either I'm going to sell, I'm going to succeed, when do I start, how do I start, somebody wants to buy my business. You go in your business, you turn off the lights, you sit there at night, and you take a little pad out, and you write down the value of all the equipment you bought and the retail price you paid for it. And then you go in the back room and you count up all the inventory and you say, God, I got to have at least $50,000 back here. And then you get so detailed as you start finding out the depth of the oil in the tank and you start writing all that crazy stuff down because you're looking for every nickel and every dime out of your business because someone's not going to come in here and steal my little million-dollar business from me and give me the shape of the reality of it is you're wasting your time. It's all about the net operating income that you're making. How engaged you are is the center point of your business, that if you could leave someday and the business fails, the business isn't good to anybody else. If someone wants to buy your location, a few of your people, then you may have something there to sell, but you'll never get any blue sky if you're not profitable. And so succession planning, and we've done a ton of interviews on it and have had so many panels. I love to talk about it because we can't talk about it enough, because I always say maybe we're going to get to one person in this podcast, we'll carry them over the line, and they'll realize that they have to reinvent themselves and or their business, or normalize their P&L and stop doing this and start doing that. And so I just want to spend maybe 15, 20 minutes, and I want to start it off with Jim, because he travels all over the country to talk about this stuff, and I think you have a few things to say about it.
I do. So a lot of people, the succession planning questions typically go with, how much can I sell my business for? Or what's my business worth? Well, the answer is it's worth whatever somebody's willing to pay for it. And if they're paying cash, then it's definitely worth what they're willing to pay for it. If they're going to finance it, then you need a CPA and you need to learn all about EBITDA, okay, which is earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization. And then I'm not going to play CPA here. But it's a percentage based off of, it's usually right now between about 2 to 3 times EBITDA. And that depends on where you are in your business. So that's a question. My question is, are you prepared to retire? When do you retire? Are you retiring because you're dying, because you want to retire, because you have to retire? Do you want to retire and sell your business, or do you want to retire and just collect money from it? Do you have to work after retirement, or are you going to stay? Do you have a succession plan? Do you have a succession plan? Does your succession plan know that they are your succession plan?
Wait a minute. You mean fathers and sons don't talk about that stuff?
Father and son, father and service advisor, father, daughter, mother, son, owner to whoever. If this owner is intending, because when you ask a shop owner this question, I know that Bill asked this question too. Who's taking over your shop? Oh, I intend for my service advisor to take it over. Great. What did he say about that? Well, I don't know. Well, the first thing you need to find out is your service advisor willing to take it over? Okay. Not can he afford it, not can he pay for it. Is he willing to take it over? Then you determine ownership. Because a couple things happen. Number one, you think your service advisor is going to take it over. Then you find out, A, he's terrified of it. He doesn't want it. He sees the hours I work. Or B, even worse than that, you're getting ready to go talk to your service advisor. And he walks in and says, I need to talk to you. The guy across the street just offered me $2 more an hour to come to work for him. And he's going to let me buy into his company eventually. I was going to give you mine. You know, if you don't tell him that it's your plan, and he doesn't know it or she doesn't know it, then you are not prepared, because you got to find that out. So that's the first thing. The second thing is you need a succession plan for your succession plan, because your ATEC is going to leave. He's going to open his own shop. He's going to get offered by somebody else for more money or something. What's your succession plan for your ATEC? So I could go on for this, but it's important to be prepared for the unexpected. We did have a client that had a succession plan planned out very well. He got broadsided by a truck. He was 49 years old, something like that, and he died. He did have a succession plan. The funeral was on a Tuesday, and on Wednesday, his succession plan fell over dead of a heart attack. So you need to be prepared more than just one level of succession plan. What's going to happen? Who's taking over for you? Who's taking over for them? And then worry about the money.
Jim, do you find that owners struggle emotionally about consider leaving this thing that gets them up each and every day to go to?
Anybody own a 63 split window Corvette? Okay, let's pretend you do. Okay, but you know, okay, how, if you have a 63 split window Corvette, how hard is it to let somebody else drive it? There you go. That's the whole thing. This is my baby. I am going to trust you to drive my baby. Just like we do with the baby techs. We have to trust them to make a mistake. I have to trust you with my baby.
And I believe there are more people in our industry that work for people like you that are ready and willing to go to the next level. And they haven't spoken to you about it. But more importantly, you haven't asked.
So also, I'll just give you one more, and then I'm giving this up. When I interview somebody, or when I advertise, or when I talk about interviewing or advertising, everyone I interview is for the future owner. Every single interview, no matter what the position is the future owner. I'm looking for somebody to take over my business. You're letting everybody know at the interview that they've got a future in your company. They got the potential to own your company. And you say, yeah, your duties tomorrow is an ATEC. but I'm interviewing for the next owner.
All right, so super sad topic for me to talk about, only because the volume of shops that have closed their doors in the last 3 to 5 years literally had no succession plan, and the plan was close the doors. Literally, it's like, oh, I'm open today, and the next week it says I'm closed because it was either never looked at or they thought it was too difficult to actually figure out how does the shop keep on moving forward without me, and they didn't want to be involved in it. Which is unbelievably sad and lends to what I said earlier, that it used to never be that way. A shop, when the racks were bolted to the floor, it was always a shop. And it's sad to see those kind of changes in our industry. And even for, like, you don't have to be the best shop owner on the planet to be able to open a second and third store nowadays, because there are literally shops willing to walk out the door and just hand you the keys. It's just, it's not that difficult to get into the auto repair business, not from the primary location or even a second, third, and fourth. And good for everybody who's in this industry who has seen that opportunity. And now there's what looks like consolidation. It's really not consolidation. It's really just people adding on for people getting out of the industry who really don't have a succession plan, which is what a shame. What a shame. 40 years, 50 years of your life to build a business that has such a great reputation. It would have taken a year, just like Donnie said. His transition from his dad to him, I had to do this exact same thing. It only took a year to have somebody there on the front line who's ready and take over most of the clientele, and the business keeps on going. So it's just, what a shame. I don't understand. So I have no insights as to why somebody would choose to close the door rather than just to keep it running or let somebody else keep it moving. Forget rent or forget income or selling the business, anything else, but just to hand the business off to somebody else seems like it's just a shame in our industry. And like I said, I don't have the answer. Just what a terrible thing to do. If that, hopefully maybe that influences somebody who hears this one day and it says, yeah, it would be a shame just to have my business just go away. So why not find somebody who can take it over? And if not, work with some of the MSOs that are in the room or with some of the MSOs that are, say, hey, how would you like to take over a business and not cost you a lot, right? There's tons of people now who are open to do that. He will be glad to exit you out. Just don't close the doors.
It reminds me of something I said a little bit ago about we've got to let our techs break things. Remember I said that? So if we have a succession plan and you can watch it work, you have to allow your successor to fail so you can be there to teach. Because think of your hard knocks learning that you had. I mean, not only did you break things as a tech, think of the things you broke as a CEO.
Nobody wants to go through that.
So again,
I don't recommend it. No, don't do that.
Don't do that?
Don't do that. No, don't learn. Don't go to school hard knocks. Don't.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah.
Just ask somebody else and I'll tell you or somebody else will tell you, don't do that. You can save yourself the headache.
Okay.
There's plenty of people to ask now.
Yeah. My point is...
I have a doctorate in hard knocks.
Oh, you tell them don't let them fail?
No, I'm being cheeky.
But okay.
To ask somebody before you just...
No, I get it. And so much of a good succession plan today is to be sure that they have a business coach. I'm sure you don't want to hear that, but how are you going to ensure the future, especially if you're holding some paper?
The Apex 19 is in the record books and brought the best and brightest together to create an experience like no other. Now, I was so impressed with the impact Apex has in presenting emerging technology. They are on the cutting edge of the connected car, and you'll find everything you need to know on what you'll need to do to stay ahead of the curve. Regarding emerging technology, Apex will feature again in 2020 the latest trends that will have an impact on the service professional and equipment. Wow, see, feel, and touch the latest tools and equipment that will bring efficiencies to your business. And in 2020, there's going to be a separate section dedicated to the service professional shop. It'll be called Repair Shop Headquarters, and it's the place to be if you earn your living in the aftermarket. And for training, Apex will present some of the best aftermarket technician and management trainers in 2020. So mark your calendar right now. Put the date on it. Apex 2020, November 3rd through the 5th in Las Vegas. Listen right here to learn all about the exciting events and when you can start registering.
Okay, so Tiger Woods has 3 coaches. Football game on Sunday morning, college football game. There's more coaches on the bench than players on the field at a time. There you go. That was it. Black book. Standard operating procedures. Everything you do should be written down in your little black book. And there's got to be people that know where your little black book is. not your spouse. If you're on a vacation, you're on the cruise ship, and it breaks down and it floats around the Gulf for 2 weeks, somebody has to know how to get into your little black book to get things done, to get your payroll taxes paid, to get your state sales tax paid. Nothing will close you down quicker than not paying your taxes. So SOPs of every job in your shop, and you have to do that in order to have a succession plan. I had to write SOPs to hire somebody to do part of my work. You all need to have SOPs for everything you do in your shop, and all that stuff's got to be available to someone in your shop, not your spouse. Because your spouse is with you. If you're, you know, stuck somewhere in another country or in a plane or in a hospital, your spouse is there.
I think part of that, too, is empowering your people and making sure that they are empowered to step in and to be you. When Donnie was talking before about, you know, him being the guy and everybody coming in to see him specifically, why is the rest of the staff not as empowered to be that guy, too? And maybe part of that is also training our customers to understand that this person will take care of you just as well as this person does, and making sure that that staff is empowered to step up to the plate and do those things.
Well, so this topic for me is one I don't want to really talk about much for a lot of the exact reasons you're talking about. So here's what I'm going to tell you. If your exit plan is they're coming to get me in the ambulance, you're screwed. So is your successor.
Right.
If your successor is not, if you don't let go of the reins soon enough, your successor will leave. These are all cold, hard facts at my business. We've had two successors leave. So if you're still holding on because that 63 split window can't be driven by anyone else, then you probably need to rethink why you actually are still in this business.
They don't drive nice. They're terrible.
They take a skilled operator.
Can't get your legs underneath the dang steering wheel in the first place, right?
And it may be a really good idea to take that 63 split window and put a Morrison chassis under it so it handles on the roads we have today.
Right, then we're talking about. Right.
That's what I'm talking about with the business.
We fixed that problem.
Right.
I said, that's where you hire a successor that's better than you.
Great, thanks. Any questions on succession planning?
Someone mentioned the MSOs, and we know that on the bottom, the collision side of this industry, the independents are getting swallowed up by these big. Do any of you see any kind of trend or have some industry insight on the mechanical side of our industry?
Oh, how interesting. I'm moderating a panel at Apex on that very subject. But and it'll also be a podcast. Please, Jay.
I think our business is too hard for that. I think the collision business is more duplicatable and process driven versus, you know, what we do in an independent repair shop. So I think you will see consolidation in the gravy work, and you'll see more of the quick lubes or the undercar come to light. I look at companies like Lyft, which I deleted off my phone just because they went into our business. So if you look at what scalable companies are going to do, it's not really everything that we do on the mechanical side. They just can't do it.
Yeah. So I think Jeremy's spot on. I've tried to build a model just for the fun of it to see what it would look like. And the non-repeatability of the hard part of our industry makes it so that you need to have some big brains. And many of them, these big companies that can do this, are trying now. They hired the same trainers we all go to. And those same trainers, because I used to work for one of them, and I would go out and do this training, and they didn't have the right bodies in the room to become the brains that could fix the cars at the level you guys do. It takes a small, highly mobile workforce to fix some of these problems, not a gigantic, we've got a process for how we're going to diagnose this problem. Because the process, as you all know, takes experiential knowledge as well as tool capabilities, as well as those processes. So I agree completely with Jeremy. There's no way I could make this work on a scale model, except that it's going to be harder and harder to make a living and compete in the brake jobs and things like that. And do we really care? Because I'd like to boil my business just down to doing hard stuff.
But there's a lot of guys growing, Donnie, to 4, 5, and 6 stores, becoming a little mini regional chain.
Yeah, regional's the thing. I think regionally you can do it. Yeah. you can support it, you know, 5 to 10 multiple shops. Now you're sharing resources, you're sharing management or fixed overhead.
Yep.
On a national level, what we've seen in the collision industry, it just realistically is super hard to do that. I just don't see it happening.
The collision side is dealing with different issues that we do, and their business model is completely different from the get-go, but they're trying to evolve out of this also. For those of you who might be in the collision industry, you'll understand, and for the rest of you, you can see this from the outside looking in. It's not really that difficult to see, but they have lived off of the insurance industry of feeding them what they get on a regular basis. That's been their livelihood. That's been their supply of new vehicles that come in. Well, then find out years later that actually the profitability on actually customer pay work is much better than what the insurance company sends you. And even though many of the shops have been living off of the basically insurance generated work, that kind of living in this customer pay world is actually more profitable. So that transition is now happening for the shops that haven't made that consolidation just yet. They're looking to kind of shore up their own financials by actually being more customer friendly. Because before, you've ever been to a collision shop, not to say they're not nice guys, but their process and their business does not evolve around the customer service level that we have to. And this is where consolidation doesn't end up working, because our business model is all built around that customer service community. We're here to take care of your vehicle, your family, make sure that, little Johnny, little Susie make it to swim practice on time. We're built around that model of making sure we're living your everyday life and making sure your car gets you there at the same time. Collision is not to say that they're any less important, but it's kind of like, oh, damn, I got to deal with this every couple of years, right? Because it's not something we live in. It's something that happens to you or happens to somebody else if you're a millennial driver. So didn't go over his head. All right. Sorry. Just had to throw that in. So The consolidation, just like they said, is way easier with a business model that's not so reliant on that customer service, that local community model. And that's why it is continuing to be super successful. There has been attempts to do that inside our industry by some people with a lot of money, by the way. There's some big investment groups that really tried to launch some out. I know because we talked to them when they were trying to launch some of their marketing. And they test marketed in a couple different places, one in Austin, Texas. They tried another one in Alabama. And they were going to roll one out in Charlotte, North Carolina. But it was failing so miserably because they could not make a connection with people on a local level.
Because they're one and doneers.
Yeah, you hit it or quit it, if you want to call it, whatever it is. Yeah, they're just looking for just that, like the insurance model, to come in, like they're going to come in. Well, they got to come in 4 times a year, so you got to be nice to them.
We're an evolving and changing business model. And, you know, with what you've all said, if the one and dones, whatever you called it there, Danny, are going to do those brake jobs and the oil changes, there's an awful lot of opportunity, because these cars are so complicated. There's so much going on with them that we're going to have to be there to solve the really tough problems.
Thinking outside the shop, I think evolution, I'm sitting here thinking of myself as a shop owner and a consultant and a training company. I don't want another auto repair shop right now, but I would not be opposed to taking my current location, opening up 24/7 and putting 5 kiosk locations to capture cars within my area in retail locations. Different business model, right? So if I could take my location now and quadruple sales without adding, you know, real estate cost or expense, yeah, I would totally be open for that. So I think we're going to see people push the edge there. Also partnerships. You've got companies that are tied into larger companies of customer basis for us. So for instance, CarMax, if any of you are doing the CarMax extended warranty program right now, they're driving great repairs into shops and it's great revenue and great profits for us right now. It could go away, but I think we'll see more of that. So absolutely, I think the future is going to be being smarter, capture the car. How do you provide the service? And, you know, we haven't talked about the autonomous vehicles coming, the shift in the platform. What is the business going to look like in 15 or 20 years? You know, we all have to be ready for the shift. It's definitely going to change.
You know, another model is to just simply not work on customer cars and own the fleet yourself. And there's a lot of new things popping up around Denver International Airport's got 2 parking companies that will house, wash, and basically shuttle your customers to your Lyft vehicles. And then Lyft has a program that you can participate in. There's another program out there that puts drivers in Lyft cars And you can run that through your shop because they have to be maintained. And you effectively make a profit off of putting a, let's say, subprime person effectively in a new vehicle because, you know, there's a requirement of it being a certain age and size and blah, blah, blah. So I've got a friend in the Seattle area who's just owns the cars that he works on. And he and his techs work the hours they want. They deliver cars to the airport. They pick people up. They shuttle them around. And they're making the same money they were making repairing cars. They figured out how to do it. I'm not going to tell you that it was a quick fix because it took them a couple of years to figure it out. But they've got it. They figured out which cars have the right profit margin as far as, you know, how long can we keep them? What's it cost to own them?
Donnie, who's the driver?
Of the car?
Yeah.
It's somebody who uses Lyft as a rental car company.
Ah, okay. It's like Turo?
Like Turo. And some of them are actually connected to Turo.
Okay.
Or multiple platforms, because there's a whole bunch of platforms now popping up.
Does everybody know what Turo is? You've heard of Airbnb?
It's for cars. There's a little app. So Vegas is one of the most expensive places in the country to rent a car. I never rent a car when I go to Vegas. We do a whole week at Apex. I rent an electric vehicle so that I can park it right next to the elevators at the convention center and have free parking, because that's the rules there. And then I shuttle my gang back and forth in this electric car that I get for one-third of what Hertz would get for a rental car that week.
And where do you rent it from?
I rent it from a private individual who owns about 10 cars.
And you buy it through an app?
And you buy it through an app. You choose the car through an app.
And what's the name of the app?
The Turo.
It is Turo. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So if you're interested in a little bit more in depth on this, I wrote an article for Babcock's Media a while back, and I interviewed a group of professional women who are trying to get out of that business, and they bought cars to do it. It's a fascinating story. Hmm.
This started, by the way, as like renting high-end cars. Mm-hmm. Like if you wanted to drive a Ferrari for a day, you want to drive a high-end BMW, Audi, Mercedes, whatever, convertible for the day, you know, Mustang, blah, blah, blah. Then this was a way for you to go and rent one for the day. And you're renting it direct from the owner of the car, actually. And Turo does all the work for you.
So interesting that 2 days ago in Detroit, ASA National had technology and telematics forum. And we're all sitting in the audience wondering why one of the lawyers from Turo was there making a presentation. We're saying, what is it? I had not known about Turo. And they talked about the stats. They talked about what people can earn, what their average car payments were, how many times the vehicle goes out. But stop and think about that for a moment. Do you know any Turo renters? And are you fixing their car? Because now their cars are going to actually have more miles on them and there's going to be more maintenance necessary. So this whole evolving business model and opportunities, some going away with Lyft and maybe some coming on with Turo. Or if not, I remember, I can't place it, bought a piece of property in a big city in a downtown. It was a piece of dirt. And friends said, what are you doing? He says, I'm going to build a parking ramp for the vehicles that I'm going to put in there that I'm going to own. I didn't understand, Donnie, until today, how to do that.
Well, and I think that's important. I think it's important for us to have future sight and be able to shift and find the revenue streams. One of the things I encourage all of our clients to do is look at your most profitable jobs right now. Which jobs do you guys high five over? Oh my gosh, we got this job. It's high five, gold star. We're going to knock it out of the park. So figure out, you know, get good marketing partners that help you capture more of those vehicles. So for instance, in our area, if 6-7 Fords are having a major issue and the average truck comes in, it's a $3,000 job. How do I get more of those 6-7s to come in? Could I get four a day? Man, if I get four a day, I only need four cars a day and we're a week, right? I show up on Monday, ride out my four cars, sell the job. I take Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday and go ride my mountain bikes with my son. I come in Friday and cash them out, right? That's my ideal week, right? If I could build that, Danny, can we build that? Well, if he's my marketing partner, I'd ask him to build it for me, right? Can we build it and deliver it? If we could and duplicate it, guess what? That's great. Now, when those cars become the 6.0s of, you know, Fords now, the 6.0s, you guys probably cringe, especially here because of all the rust and the chassis completely gone. Then I've got to shift my marketing to what's next. But we live in a world that you can shift your marketing instantaneously and have whatever you want at your doorstep.
So going on that same Turo kind of thought process, are the ramp thought process. If anybody's thinking about a weird little location to open, in Omaha, Nebraska, in the office building that Berkshire Hathaway is located in. There is an entrepreneur who leases four bays in the parking lot, in the parking garage. And his entire business is maintenance and low-end repair on the people's cars that work in that building. And they come in the morning, and they hand him their keys, and they say, I'm in parking space B12. He goes and gets their car, does the work, changes the oil. He's got one of his bays is a detail shop. One is an oil change, and one does minor repairs. Then he goes and parks it back in their bay and picks up the next car and so on. And his whole business is conducted in that office building. And there are one or two office buildings around this city with parking garages in them. All you have to do is come up with the lease on the parking spaces and get them to cooperate.
And if you don't want to go to that step, here's something just a little bit simpler. We had a Dodge Caravan that we used to pick up and leave cars in different places. And I had the whole back of the van lettered up. So we would go pick up a customer's car, would be in their parking spot, go pick up the car and then leave the van and then swap them out later, right? So I had the whole back of the van lettered up that said, my car is getting serviced today at Laguna Gale Service Center. To schedule yours, call this number.
ADAS calibration centers, Donnie, do you think there's a big future in that? And should we be thinking of it?
We were talking about that at the table back there. And I think that it's very, very market specific. It's very much where you physically are. You need a big collision feed, because I don't think ADAS calibration is going to be a common thing that you do all the time, right? Many of the vehicles, if they're still in the ballpark, even if something has to be changed, they've got active calibration, they will do it on their own with minimal invasion. In fact, maybe none whatsoever. So thinking of that as common as doing a steering angle reset when you do an alignment, I think is not realistic. So my biggest concern is that people are going to go down that road and overstretch. However, if, as this gentleman over here has a building for sale right next to him, he's surrounded by collision shops, I would seriously give that some thought. Yeah. If you can make it work. But you're dealing with insurance companies who still really don't understand how the pay part of this works what they should pay for and what happens when you get in this. Well, you've got really easy traffic here in Chicago, right? You never have any trouble.
Right.
Yeah. So what happens if you get an active calibration where you've got to have a certain amount of clear road and a certain amount of lines on the road, and what happens on the day it snows, and how do you get paid for that? So that becomes a bit of a challenge. So I think yes and no. I think if a bunch of businesses open up, you'll see a lot of them fail.
Right. And my thinking on that is that they're really more regional or community based. I mean, if you want to get into it and there's nobody in your area and you've got the space and the money, I don't see anyone looking and saying, oh, darn, I was going to get into it, but now I'm not, because now there'll be two and three and four. One could support 25,000-30,000 people in a community. That's my point is,
yeah.
I think we're going to see them, but I don't think we're going to see them on every corner.
There's a window, and you have to be the firstest and the bestest.
Yeah,
yeah, I think, though, one thing also, Drew Tech, their parent company, Opus, is really looking at how can they support these calibration service centers, so to speak, and they've really given it a lot of thought. So if you're thinking of going that way, I would reach out to them, because they're actively seeking people to work with in that respect. But it's a big lift. If you're doing one thing, to you're building a completely different business, that if you're a service repair shop, you're now going to have to get your head around how insurance billing goes. And that's a complete change in model for us.
Oh, yeah. Working with insurance companies, especially on a collision claim. It's different when we're working with insurance companies for repairs. But when you're talking about a collision claim, oh, yeah, completely different ball of wax.
Collision is fun. Don't let anybody scare you away.
I absolutely had a blast. It was great to meet so many new friends. And I would love to thank my panel, our panel, your panel, Jeremy, Donnie, Sarah, Danny, and Jim. Thank you, Doug and Pat and Donna and Deb. I'll turn it over to you guys.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.